woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the
sun. Well, welcome back to Jack. Sal Tamale, just met Weber on the board. SP Futures up a whole $4. NASDAQ Futures up 34. This is after we had a pretty big turn to the down yesterday. NASDAQ was Futures. At one point, we're up like 95, and they finished down, when they were down 80, I think they finished down 67. That was a reasonable turn. We haven't had one of those in a while. Now today we're kind of hugging the flat line a little bit to the positive, just a little bit, so... not sure if yesterday was any kind of a turn at all. I would say probably not. Might have just been a pause. But the next couple of days will tell. Kevin, how are you?
Doing all right. I'm guessing the markets are just waiting for an announcement to trigger up or down.
Well, that would be nice. Or some central bank throwing more money.
Because it has become the world's most emotional organism of any kind. It's the stock market.
Well, let's just say it reacts to the amount of money flow coming in, and it shouldn't do this. The
well, I think, yeah, if you drew the trend line, I think that would be true. But the daily is that it just you know, we announce a some optimism on a vaccine way up.
Oh, yeah.
We announce something else way down, and it's, you know, it's an interesting roller coaster to watch.
It definitely is. I would there's no way you can debate that. I don't think there's any, everything we've talked about on the show for years is coming to fruition, I think, maybe not in a good way. I mean, the markets are not, there's not a whole lot of depth and liquidity of the markets at any kind of a news. I mean, there's no standing orders really too much, just some stops and things. Stops make it worse. But, you know, any kind of a news and everybody just gets out of the way. I mean, there's no, it's not like people, you know, IBM is trading 130 and, you know, at 128 there are massive bids, and at 132 there's massive offers. I mean, those days are gone. I mean, if it starts to move one way or the other, everybody just gets out of the way. And, you know, it makes it very difficult. That's why I think you need to, if you trade, you need to have, you know, maybe options behind you if you're going to trade the future, so that you're never naked anything you do. I mean, that would be my guess or my advice, but I don't think anybody will take it.
I mean, well, that and some Maalox and you're home free.
Yeah, pretty much. little X-Lax and everything goes, right? And what can I say?
Or maybe some X-Lax. That's probably more like it. Maybe that's what the market needs is a good colon cleanse.
Yeah, well, it's... But, I mean, it's... you know, I've run into some people last night, one of my buddies I haven't seen for a while and has been out for a long time. I was like, hey, you want to stop out? Sure. I mean... Yeah, and I bumped in a couple other people, Kevin. Man, the self-flagellation that's going on by some people in this country, it's just, good Lord. I mean, they were, every other country's handling this better than us. We don't know what we're doing. People won't listen. People won't wear masks. They won't stay home. What's the matter with them? I'm like, what makes you think we're handling any worse than any other country? Like, I read all the statistics. What statistics?
What statistics are you reading?
Yeah.
We got, like, the best mortality rate in the world.
Yeah, and you know, but the people that I've run into lately, Kevin, that have just come out—I'll use that term—that have done nothing. I mean, hopefully they clean their place.
That term's taken, Tom. You got to come up with another one.
Well, you just sit in front of the TV all day and listen. How many times have people heard? In fact, I finally said, By the way, how many people do you think have caught it in China? Well, 85,000. Everybody knows that. Like, you know, I'll take the over on 2 million. What do you mean? I said, well, 85,000 in China. What are you out of your mind? I mean, they had a million something in April, for God's sake. Why do they keep saying 85,000?
I don't December.
Know. Or December. I don't know. Man, why do people keep repeating that number? Well, look at Germany. I said, do you have any idea how different Germany is than New York or any other place? I mean, there seems to have been some sort of more of an immunity that people there had than other countries, but if you take away a little bit, they're all kind of the same, all these curves. I mean, I don't know, but it's... On one side of the population, it all drops down to this. If people won't listen to other people telling them what to do, we're screwed. And then the other side of the population is, I don't want anybody telling me what to do necessarily. And, you know, so I mean...
There's people who are completely irresponsible about everything, but there are a lot of people who are saying, I'll take the information and then I'll make decisions.
Yeah.
For myself. And I think most people will make intelligent decisions for themselves.
And, you know, they said, look at what's going on in Arizona. I said, if a bunch of people, 25 to 35, don't feel they're going to die for it, and 99% of them won't, and they don't care, and they're going to go out and play basketball and go to the bar, and they all get it, and 2 weeks from now they're all immune, at least for a while. Is that a good or a bad thing? No, what if they come in contact with an old person, like they don't have that right? I said, the old person can take care of themselves. In a larger way, if you're going home to grandma, who's 90, she probably doesn't know anything about it, but this whole idea that, you know, I guess the conclusion to this ridiculous monologue here is that I don't know that anybody, whoever you are, you could be Lincoln, you could be Solomon, you could be Washington, you could be the Holy Ghost. I don't see how you drop in the middle of this argument. Right up, which I, you know, here, this would be actually crazy, I know, Kevin, in this world. If you were president, they actually write down on a piece of paper what your plan is in 100 words or less and say, this is what we're going to do. And for people, if it's not a tweet, it's not 11 letter or whatever, how many characters it is, you just say, here is our plan. And this is what we're going to do. And, I don't know of anybody.
I think leaders, it's a bit much asking for leadership like that.
I know, but it's a, as one as somebody wants.
You're so out of line.
Well, as somebody wants to find leadership to me is in a group of 12 people, the first guy to put a written plan in the middle of the table and put his neck out and say, okay, let's critique it, let's tear it apart and let's go from there, but at least we got to start. The first person to do that's the leader. I don't see anybody doing that, do you?
No, and, if you really want to get me started, sit back and we'll coast into the bottom of the hour break. But I have a whole construct around this of what leadership actually is, and we won't. Maybe I'll write a blog post. I'll write it into a blog post. In fact, I have one that I use for online classes, so I'll share it and maybe we'll post it on the blog.
Speaking of, but I digress.
I think that's part of it, but you know, there sort of is this this notion. Well, I think we kind of laid it out as the competing ways of thinking about this, and one is just shut up and do what you're told, and it won't spread. And I think that has lost sight of any reality because. So I'm critiquing it, even though I'm sort of laying out this dichotomy. I am definitely taking a side on this, but it's don't think, just do what you're told, and because the experts know better. Well, you know what? A lot of people have that reaction, I believe, because of the data that's presented. And if you remember, I keep saying all the time. You have to have data to make good decisions. However, it's probably really more apt to say that you need at least knowledge, and ideally, well, at least information, and then ideally knowledge is probably the best way to put it. So if you start to figure out what data means. There's raw data, and that's just a bunch of facts. That's what we get on the news regularly. Here, we crossed the 5 millionth case or the 5 jillionth case or whatever it is. Well, you know, that's just data. That it doesn't tell you much. It's just random data. Knowledge is when you start organizing it and making some sense of it. Well, let me put it this way. That's not even knowledge. That's information. Information is sort of synthesizing it and making some sense out of it. And knowledge is knowing what to do with it, is you know, having enough information to actually make some decisions. And that's, you know, again, people in the quality management world get this because that's how they live. Is if you don't really have any insight into process or insight into what's going on, if you don't have that real knowledge, then you're going to make bad decisions. So to sort of revise the notion that you need good data to make decisions, I would also say that data in the hands of amateurs is probably more dangerous than anything.
I would disagree with that. I mean, I won't disagree with that. I will say this though, Kevin, as all this, the stuff that you and Carl and other people are sending me that I'm reading as best I can, I don't know when, I mean, I guess I'm not being a doctor, I don't know when I've come across anything as complicated as this disease. I mean, it really is.
I'm willing to bet you that the spread of the flu is equally complicated. It's just that we understand it a lot better because it's been around longer.
Probably. But I guess the thing you sent out yesterday, which we should probably tweet out or send out, we can't really tweet it out, the one about the T cells is pretty fascinating.
Yep.
Where I'm going here is that when they start doing the tests for people who have the antibodies, the idea being is that they would be immune to this at least for a while. I mean, nobody's saying forever. Is that people get, there seems to be, and Carl's talked about it a bunch of times, there seems to be some kind of an immunity to a lot of people that's already there. And nobody seems to know what exactly it's from.
Yeah, nobody's pinned that down.
Nobody's pinned it down. So,
in this particular article,
this particular starts talking about
the title. I'll tweet it when we get done.
But they essentially are talking about some people. You can either have immunities from this specific disease. I mean, again, I'm just quoting the article. I'm not being Dr. Chief here. That'd be ugly. There seems to be people that have these residual T cells that are just as immune to the disease as somebody who has the antibodies. And for whatever reason, now there's confirmation in all these studies about these residual T cells that some people seem to have, but nobody can figure out what disease they're from. Either this thing went through earlier in a milder stage, or there was a milder SARS that went through and nobody even knew about it, or could be some kind of a really bad cold that set up a T cell. So some percentage of the population.
Like as you said, this disease and maybe an early mutation of it, or a mutation from somewhere along the line that gives you the cross immunity, but is not very recognizable and did not come with symptoms or had very, very mild symptoms.
This is spectacularly good news, by the way. it's the reason why 98% of the people on the cruise ship didn't get sick, or everybody in the aircraft carrier didn't get sick, right, Kevin? We don't even figure out what it is.
Yeah, there is some kind of cross immunity out there, and it was. I think the cruise ship, the difference between the two, the carrier was 23% infection,
yeah,
and the cruise ship was 18% infection. The difference between the two was that more people died on the cruise ship, and that's very much attributable to the average age of the people on each particular boat or each ship. The average age on the carrier was 19, and the average age on the Diamond Princess was 69.
Yeah, big difference. I thought that, so only 23% on the Diamond Princess got it. I thought it was more like 50, but I didn't know.
No, I think the Diamond Princess was, I think that actually had the better percentage. I think it was a little bit lower. Both, you know, figure 80-20 for both.
Well, that's,
just the mortality rate that was different. And there's other cases.
You could almost make the claim or the statement, of course, could never be disproven or proven, that the big guy upstairs has given us a trial run on one of these. It would be like really, really bad if everybody dies. Because it seems like we're catching a break here. Not the people that died, they didn't catch a break, but it seems like there's a few breaks along the way here we're getting.
Well, it could be that, or it just could be that humans are sort of like cockroaches in their own way. They're really, really hard to kill, no matter how noble a task it is to try.
Yeah, but I think that's probably true. I continue, though, Kevin, is that, and this is not trying to be Doggy Downer, who's the guy,
Debbie Downer.
And the, who's the guy?
Doggy Downer.
Who's the guy? Will?
That was different. That was a good Saturday Night Live routine.
Who's the guy? We'll never make it. It'll never work. Who's that guy? They used to talk about it. It was a cartoon character. Guys on the floor used to say it all the time. We'll never make
it.
Yeah,
I know who you're talking about, and I can't remember the name either.
But the economy, and this is not something I just dreamed up the last couple of months. This is something, if you've been listening to the show forever, how you have to view your economy and how intricate it is, and how there's still to this day an incredible amount of places that are big boons to the economy that are really hard to count. And I don't think, other than maybe the Great Depression, Kevin, I've never seen those areas wiped out like they are now. And since you never really counted them, never really could count them on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. I mean, you knew they were there at the end of the year when they sent in their taxes or whatever. I don't think I've ever seen it decimated like this. I mean, the amount of... I was just reading in CNBC came out in Nevada, you know, where you've got... I don't know... What do you think, man? Do you think everybody who's a dealer in a casino is an employee, or do you think there's people that are contractors? I mean, I don't know. I don't know how they pay the showgirls. I don't know how they pay...
I'm sure there's plenty of contractors out of the whole lot.
Because their unemployment rate's up to 22%, but the mortgage non-pay rate, whatever you call that, is like 10%. It's 9.99. That's real high. I mean, what leads me to believe the real amount of people, quote, out of work has got to be more than 22%. It's not usually half mortgages not being paid versus the unemployment rate. But it just seems... But I don't know. Now it's the point. I don't know how all these people get paid. I said on the air the other day that I thought all the people in like the opera and the symphony, traditionally they would get paid every night of the performance. But now people are telling me a lot of them are salaried. So, I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, do you have any clue, Manny? I mean, you're younger. Do you know anybody's in that business? Are they all salaried now? A union or what? I don't even know.
I don't know.
But I think the numbers, if you count the people. Let's put it this way. The household survey should be different than the establishment survey. Is that a fair way to put it, Kevin? Maybe we'll have Carl on.
Based on essentially counting 1099 workers, yeah.
And I think my feeling is, and it's a fairly educated feeling, that whatever we're hearing about how bad things are, they're actually worse. Because I really do believe when things are going good, whenever they say it's going good, it's actually going better. Because people are getting hired, they're getting a second job, somebody's going, hey, you know, I need someone, I got to remodel this guy's kitchen on the weekend, how about helping me out? And the guy makes a few hundred bucks. I don't think you catch any of that when things are going good. And when those guys all of a sudden don't get that job, I don't think you catch it either when things are bad. Although I will say, some of that business, everybody I know who's in this week in the air conditioning business, you can't find anybody. So now would be the time to have a trade, I guess. I mean, if you knew how to put in an air conditioner, this would be the week for it.
This would be a really, really good week for it.
Yeah, I mean, I have no clue. I call my two guys, and they're both, because I know a couple people that say, hey, chief, where's your air conditioning guys? Are they around? Yeah, they're around. They're busy as hell. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to find people. But, again, Kevin, we should be having a slew of people from, like, you know, I'm not just saying from bad neighborhoods, from every neighborhood. This is when, you know, we should try and open up a school for, like, wood shop and plumbing and things like that. Now would be the time to train people. In some ways, I get this email from somebody. I don't know who the hell it was. And it had to do with, if you didn't, if you had the 3 months off that you've always said that if you just had it, everything would be good. how much you want to bet you still haven't cleaned the garage, you still haven't cleaned your office, you still haven't lost the 20 pounds. I mean, right? I mean, it's like...
I'm all for three on that one.
Yeah, yeah, me too. And I think now would be, I don't care if you wore a hazmat suit, now would be the time, if you could reopen Tilden Tech or someplace and have carpentry classes, wouldn't this be the time? I mean, no, we're not doing anything of any, it doesn't appear anything of any sort of think-out-of-the-box intelligence. I would bet you that if you found a way to distance even a little bit and wore masks or something, even I'm not a big mask proponent, but you need to wear masks in a carpentry place anyway, and you had opened up the schools that had those kinds of things, the amount of adults would be there trying to learn a second thing would overflow the place. And yet we don't even think about something like that, do we?
Well, part of the issue is that the schools that do already offer that kind of stuff are still struggling with this whole notion of what the reopening model is, and how to effectively teach. I know, for my part, I know what to do for business classes, for supply chain classes, even for some IT classes, although, we know we have to have lab access for the network people. But the, I don't know what you do, whether it's, anything from, like you said, trades to culinary to, all of those kinds of things. If you're trying to, it's not very economical to do it on unlimited class sizes. And then, but if you want to do the whole distancing process and maintain that, then, how do you go about doing that? And, we need to get past that somehow. And I think, I think schools in general are struggling with it. Russell will probably tell you the same thing.
But what are they struggling for, Kevin? Are they struggling for, there was a guy on, the other day, not just because he's from Duke, ranting and raving about anybody who tries to open a school up is out of their mind, blah, blah, blah. And I felt like if I could beam next to the guy and I go, you've just got your last paycheck until you teach, you bozo. All of a sudden, I think the guy'd be on next week. We'll find a way.
I think that's fairly true. It goes back to, our opening discussion about where people's meters are for all of this kind of stuff, and the lack of really understanding of the of what data is telling us and how to learn from it. I think that's a part of it. I think part of it is what we observed in the first place, is nobody wants to be the one who causes the outbreak. So you have to deal with that. And then, I certainly, if you're running a school and you have thousands of people involved, I certainly get the caution from, from a lot of quarters, because you're making decisions not for yourself and not on an individual basis. You're making decisions that that could affect thousands of people, and that's that's an incredible responsibility too. And I don't envy people who have to make those decisions.
The lady was on yesterday from American Federation of Teachers. Well, she wouldn't come on this show, I guarantee you, because I would ask her some questions. She wants double the amount of classes, so you can have kids 6 feet away, because now people are back to the standard. People are starting to wing the standard out there. The standard that I talked about on the 1919 study regarding tuberculosis, which was everybody's, I don't know about it's contagious, but everybody's way more deadly than this thing. And that study, which took like months, they felt that if you weren't within 3 feet, you weren't all that, not that it couldn't happen, but 3 feet was a distance, not six. And six was some half-assed study during the first Bush administration regarding people, how far away they'd have to be on airplanes. So now we've got people sitting right next to each other on airplanes, right? which is kind of crazy, when it should be probably 6 feet. And we got people 6 feet away in restaurants when the number should be probably 3 feet. But the part that you would think, Kevin, we've been basically farting around with this, and that's the proper term, to be honest with you, since January. Can anybody tell me?
Are you telling me farts are contagious too, and or just that we need masks that
we could use
will filter out the odor.
Tell you what, there were some days in the OEX pit we could have used some masks. just saying, it's politically incorrect. I can't say it. Does anybody even know how contagious, how dangerous a 7-year-old is, or a 10-year-old at this point? Carl seems to think they're almost immune, and they don't. And if they're asymptomatic and they don't pass it on, now that's Carl talking, who studies his ass off on this stuff, and he's. But still, is it? Can anybody tell me what is the danger in a second grade class? After all this time, I'm thinking the answer is no.
Yeah. And the answer is no.
Why?
And
this
is
America.
The danger really among faculty and staff. There's a lot of moving parts to this, and yeah, I just wonder if we shouldn't just say the heck with it, let the chips fall where they may. We needed to thin the herd anyway.
Well, as long as we're not one of the thinnies, but I guess one of these days that's going to happen.
By the way, Joe writes
nobody
in.
Nobody has ever accused me of that.
Oh.
Joe writes in and says, Schleprock from the Flintstones was the cartoon you were looking
there
for.
There you go. There you go. S&P futures up 125. NASDAQ futures up 31. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber, and Mr. Kevin O'Neill with it as well. S&P futures up 3.25, and the NASDAQ futures up 40, just after a big turnaround yesterday. Dow futures down 1. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX is down 39, so they were really up 2 days ago, not even down 2 days in a row. Down 39.3%, FTSE down 6, pretty flat. CAC RAND down 38, that's 0.7%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 176, that's 0.8%. Shanghai up again, 58, 1.7. This is after the government is basically loaning people money to buy stocks. Very bizarre thing going on over there. But it's chased the market up like 10% in 3 days. Hang Seng up 153.6%. So money pouring into the market is always works like for a while. Dow Jones yesterday was down 396, S&P down 34, NASDAQ down 89. So everybody was down over 1% except for the NASDAQ. NASDAQ is still sticky. Nobody wants to sell Apple. Nobody wants to sell Tesla. Nobody wants to sell Amazon. Even though Amazon was down yesterday. Actually, the big mover yesterday was Walmart as they announced they're now going to actively compete more with Amazon. They were up like $7. A big move for those guys. 10-year, 0.65, kind of right where it's been. The Bund, minus 0.45. Japan is hanging above zero. It was 0.04. We're at 0.01. We've got oil down 2 cents, still over 40, 40.60. Brent down up 6 cents, 43.14. Natural gas, 185. RBOB, 127. Last but not least, gold up 320, 18.13 on the gold. Silver up another dime, 18.80. Wow. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a good start so far on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, but we do have a couple of issues to report. Looks like on the outbound Kennedy, just before Irving Park Road, there's a crash blocking the left lane. Not causing much for delays, but you'll have a little bit of a slowdown as you're approaching Irving Park Road. Downtown to Montrose is about 10 minutes, to O'Hare is about 22 minutes, so just slightly longer than normal as you have to get around that left lane issue. But no issues on the inbound side. Edens looks good, as does the Eisenhower. We do have an issue on the Stevenson. The left shoulder is blocked on the outbound side just before Pulaski. So Lakeshore Drive to the Tri-State is 30 minutes to I-355 is 39 minutes. IDOT's blocking the left shoulder with a semi on the shoulder. A piece of large concrete believed to have fallen off another semi is causing the closure there, or the slowdown, I should say. And then on the inbound Stevenson, we have an issue blocking the two right lanes. It was a crash on the northbound side just before Pulaski. So some stop-and-go traffic as you're coming inbound on the Stevenson. So those are the major issues this morning. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Weather today, some clouds early. Could have some storms later on. Another hot and steamy day with a high of 88. Right now, it's mostly cloudy and 76 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot with a high of 110 today. Right now, it's clear and 90. Real quick, Chief, on this day in sports history, July 8th, going back to 1946, baseball granted a $5,000 minimum salary. So 1946, the minimum player was making $5,000. In 2020, on this date, the minimum salary is $563,500. So a bit of a hike there over the last 80 years. Chief.
So if you can come up from like for a week from AAA, that's a good week.
That's a good week.
It's a nice paycheck.
Yeah, I wonder how that's going to work with the new expanded rosters.
Well, and there's no minor league.
And no, yeah, but don't they get to have like 60 people around or something?
Yeah, well, so what do the other 30 do?
They're not all active, by the way. So
what's the name?
They probably don't have to pay them unless they activate them. Or pay them that much.
You got to at least pay them as if they were in AAA.
But at any rate, that's, you know, that's, it's going to be interesting to see how that happens, how that all works out.
You got to at least pay them what they would have made in AAA.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Yeah, so you have 60.
I'm sure there's something in there that, you know, the Players Association isn't that feckless.
You'll have,
feckless at all.
Like Kevin said, you'll.
In terms of their hardline negotiating.
Like Kevin said, you'll have 60 guys, and then at the beginning of the season, I believe it's a 28-man active roster, so the other 32 would be considered in the minor leagues and paid accordingly, and then it goes down to 27 guys, and then I think it settles at 26 guys for the final stretch. There will be a big taxi squad of guys going back and forth, and their salaries adjusting accordingly, I would think.
Well, when you say back and forth to where?
Well, back and forth between being active and inactive.
I think they're actually.
What do you think I meant?
Well, when you say back and forth, there's got to be two places.
Exactly, active and inactive.
All right, so I guess what I'm saying, where we're
in the stands and on the bench.
Yeah. Who cares where they are? I don't know, the hotel.
I think they're going to be in South Bend.
That could be.
Using
I
that
don't
minor?
Think they're going to.
Well, that's where they've been so far. They're saying that they're going to use that minor league facility down there for the guys that aren't here. It'll be work to work out. They have some place. Where else are you going to go? Out to some high school, maybe?
Yeah, who knows? Anyway.
I'm just saying, you know.
How long have I been telling you that Amazon's making, or Walmart's making a run at Amazon?
Yeah. So you bought options the day before yesterday.
I absolutely did, yeah, sure.
That's what I was thinking. Just to give you a quick.
You know what, the thing is, they have been doing it. They're announcing what they've been doing all along. So what they're really telling you is it's working reasonably well, and now we're going to scale.
Well, I think this is not a slam in anybody, although take it as a slam if you think so. Because my wonderful young lady friend is certainly in this group. The genius of the people at Amazon, in addition to tricking people out of paying taxes, which I still fume about, but especially when states are broke, it was to get people to do this Prime thing. I mean, I buy stuff online sparingly, but I do it once in a while, and I don't care where I get the stuff. So if I put in there, like, you know, headlights for my truck, there'll be five places that pop up, and usually there's four of them that are better than Amazon, or three, or whatever. I mean, Pep Boys does every bit as good of prices. Walmart certainly does. I mean, it's not like these guys, but by having this Prime thing where you pay them $60 for something, people absolutely are driven. They'll blow by anything to get to Amazon. So I think what Walmart's doing is they're coming up with their own membership, for lack of a better term, and that you pay for, and once you pay for it, you're going to lock yourself in for reasons unknown. I mean,
what also works well for Prime's purposes is that they bundle in music, movies, programming, all of that kind of stuff that you can get with that is, you know, built into the membership. So most people, I don't want to speak for most people. A lot of people get it for because then the shipping is covered for for almost everything you buy, and the value of that, I think, is that you don't have to shop the shipping too, because not everybody charges the same thing for
right.
it. So you know, it's kind of nice to say, okay, it's a Prime eligible product. Just click on here, and it'll be here in a couple of days, and they won't charge you anything extra for it. And that's a good thing. I think that there's some that's a good value add, I think, to what they do. But what's going to be interesting with Walmart is that, and I think I sent you something on this maybe last week, that Target and Walmart are doing. They're converting a lot of their stores to be part store, part warehouse. So a little less footprint for the retail space, and substituting in the warehouses. Now, what that does for you is, first of all, and especially in urban areas where you don't want to have a lot of drop-offs where they just leave it on the porch. You know, where I live, they leave it on the porch. if you're not home, if you don't answer the door, they leave it there and nobody messes with it. I don't think that's going to be the same way it happens in Chicago.
Well, we have, so, there's certain areas where they'll drop it. And we have a vestibule, so, I mean, it's not like nobody's come in the vestibule and taken something all the time I've lived there, but by and large, we're okay, although people will leave it. But I had somebody take something that was an L.L. Bean drop-off, you know, years ago, and I called, and they said, well, every zip code or every minor zip code or whatever, UPS gets the okay. They were all UPS in those days from L.L. Bean. They get the okay from L.L. Bean to drop it outside. And our area was one of those that you could drop it outside or in the vestibule. And sure enough, one night, you know, some bleep must have followed the UPS truck and cleaned up about 8 porches in a row on our block and the block next. And L.L. Bean, because they gave the UPS the permission to drop outside, basically ate it and sent everybody new stuff. Because they didn't want the hassle of, you know, seeing the note on your door and have to go to the UPS office, all the other stuff you used to have to do. So
they're just making a business decision that they're going to eat a certain amount of them, and in return they're going to get some additional savings or some additional sales or something like that.
And I think the UPS charge was cheaper, too. I'm not
positive. I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right, because they don't have to try and re-deliver. So that's one of the values, though, that Walmart has is that they, you know, that the number of people in the United States who live real close within a few miles of a Walmart is incredibly high. So for those who need to do pickup, and if you've ever shopped at Walmart online, one of the things that you can do is you can go shop your store, and then you can place the order, and it'll be ready for you by the time you get over there. So you don't even have to wait for shipping the next day or anything like that. Or do like the Prime Now delivery where you don't even have to wait a few hours. You just go get it. One of the value adds to that, too, is that you get the efficiency of a warehousing operation. But, for example, if you shop your groceries, you may say, you know, I still want to pick out my produce, or I still want to pick out, the steaks that I want to order. So what you do is you get all of the other shopping out of the way where, you know, one box is as good as the next, and then you go into the store, you shop for what the stuff where you're picky, and then at the checkout counter you have the rest of your order waiting, and you check out, and you're in and out of there in a few minutes. And that's probably more valuable at Target than Walmart, because if you're really picky about your meats,
The whole population is at home with basically nothing to do, and they're worried about spending 40 less seconds at the Walmart?
Well, it's not 40 less. It could be 30 minutes less.
Okay.
It could be that you get a week's worth of shopping done going into the store for 10 minutes.
When this first started, Kevin, it is priceless. I'm looking for my headlight went out in the Suburban, right? So I go, okay, how do I get a headlight? Well, you need one like right away. So I went online, and of course there's the Walmart out in Hodgkins, and they say we've got them in stock, and I ordered them, and they said we'll have them at our little thingy, just come pick it up. Well, it's right on the way to Audrey's, and I go, I walk in, and I see the big arrow, you know, if you're picking stuff up, go this way. So this place is big as like a shopping center, right? It's huge. It was originally like 4 other stores that the Walmart took over in a shopping center. So, you know, it's the half a mile, not that I need to walk, so it's not, and I like walking, so it's not a big deal. So I go from one end to the other, because I went in by the garden section. I go all the way to the other, past all the cash registers, then there's the arrow, turn right. So I end up turning right, I get to the ass end of the store, turn another right. It turns out the pickup spot couldn't have been 50 feet from the entrance that I came in. The arrows circled me the entire place back to the... And guess what? They didn't have them.
and they didn't have them. My experience with Walmart online for pickup, and they'll ship too. I mean, it's not that they won't ship. But my experience with them is that you walk in... there's a kiosk right there. You scan, you have a little barcode in the email, so you don't even go until you get the confirmation that it's ready. You get out your smartphone, let it scan your barcode from the confirmation email or text, and then the thing gets auto-delivered.
Well, so
it comes up on a conveyor belt and the door pops open, or they have it waiting in a little locker, and the door to the locker pops open for you, and you get your stuff and you walk out.
Well, they won because I of course grabbed a cart somewhere along the way and I had a few things in it, you know. The first time I heard that, Kevin, and this is how, I try and tie these things together for business. The first time I heard this, we gave a seminar, PTI seminar, with the CBOE actually in Vegas. This had to be 2000? No, it was after the 87 crash, 90, 91, somewhere in there. And we got the best deal downtown at the Golden Nugget, right? So, which they did a spectacular job for us. I never stayed there. Places, you know, anyway, they did a great job for the seminar. And, one of the bartenders was telling me, yeah, you know, I worked for the Mirage when they were all going up and human resources are hiring everybody. And then when they had everybody there, then, you know, I was expendable. And he was telling me before then, when you went to Vegas, and I used to go all the time, you know, in the '70s, late '70s, eighties, if you wanted a show ticket, you pretty much got it anywhere. I mean, there were little kiosks everywhere. If you wanted to go to the show at the Stardust, you could get it at the Frontier, you know. And, well, now the guy at the Mirage, what the hell's his name? The guy who just, he just died? What's his name, man? The guy who put up the Mirage and, he used to own, he owned something else, then he sold it, and then he built the Mirage, and he built the Treasure Island. What the hell's his name? Anyway, but he,
Joel Bergman?
No, the guy was going blind. That's why the Mirage went up so fast. Anyway, the guy says, now, when Siegfried and Roy was such a, they thought they were going to be such a draw, the only place that you could get tickets was at the Mirage. And it wasn't by the front door either. It is a huge casino. At that time it was probably the biggest one there. So the ticket office was like right in the middle of the casino.
Steve Wynn. Yeah, it's a Wynn property.
And he, which ones did he sell before he built that place, man?
I don't know.
I'm going foggy. Anyway, So the guy says, we figured out that every person who goes in to buy the tickets somehow spends gambles.
He had the Golden Nugget.
Right, that's right.
That was the big one, and then the Mirage and Treasure Island,
yep.
And Bellagio. And yeah, he's got casinos in Atlantic City and in Mississippi and all over.
When he built the Mirage, well, anyway, they said the average person was $27.50. I'll bet Walmart does the exact same thing. They know exactly if you come in to pick up. It's not zero. I bet the average person is like 10, 15 bucks coming. They're not about to put that pickup, you know, maybe now with the SARS, or when SARS, the COVID, they'll come out to the car with you, but that was never the intention. The idea was that's just another way to get you in the store. I'm guessing, but.
Well, that may have been the original thinking. Now it's their business model, for competing. And, you know, Amazon's got a different model. Amazon's model revolves, or, you know, they've become very much a logistics company, and they own their own, you know, their warehouses are different because their footprint, their real estate footprint, is essentially it's Whole Foods, and you can't, you know, those stores aren't really convertible in any significant way to warehouse space, but they have all kinds of warehouses that they build standalone. And they have their own fleets now, so they do their own delivery for local delivery. And, you know, they've just gone a different path. It'll be interesting to see which one proves to be most cost-effective.
Kevin, we talk about valuing stocks. You know, Amazon obviously is a pretty tough one. Tesla, if anybody's watching the markets at all, this Tesla phenomenon, you know, it rivals, railroads back in the, whatever day, the 1800s, and rivals TV, it rivals eBay. I mean, you just can't, some of the dot-bomb stuff, and it just, you do not want to be shorted. But I will say this, and I don't recommend anybody short it, even though the thing's 1400 hours, it's up, 1000 hours in about 2 months, some incredible number. I'll get that number exactly here in a second, but there's a headline here today that if it ever goes back to where I think it's valued, this headline will be right there. Tesla is a stock you cannot fundamentally value. It's like it used to be back when people had like magazines and so forth, that the kiss of death for the market was, when you see on a cover of like Time or Newsweek, can't stop the bull market or something like that. And I've got a 9/9/2019, so 9 months ago, Tesla's $245. Now it's $1,401. I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that, Kevin. Well, you saw some of those in the dot-bomb era. But some of these places, we're starting to talk, and Tesla's not one of them. I gotta dig into the fundamentals maybe for tomorrow, but some of these places we're talking, these software companies are 20 times sales now. You start getting that number, those are 2000, year 2000 valuations. I mean, they get this momentum stack, they just keep going, and all of a sudden one day, they maybe don't have any shoes, but the same sort of thing was happening back then at a much smaller scale with the Fed. They were so concerned about Y2K, they were pouring money in before the clock turned. So 2000, take the lag time effect of money going into the system. That's sort of what happens. But this is, they had to...
Yeah, but wasn't the effect a little bit different? They weren't necessarily trying to fuel the economy as much as they were trying to make sure that we didn't have a run on the banks if everything went to hell.
Money's money, Kevin. Doesn't matter what the reason is.
I understand. But then the way they went about, taking it back out of the system, was affected by that. This ain't coming out of the system anytime soon. Sometime, and maybe we'll do this on Friday, is, think about that. What would you do now if you were king of the economy and you had to start, back to some sane road, some road to sanity again? How would that happen? How many years do you think it would take, in a range? How many, and what would that look like? Because we're going to have to do this sooner or later. We're going to see an interest rate adjustment that is just going to be catastrophic if we don't start dialing this back, or are we just going to wait for the catastrophe?
Let's hope not. I don't, what's surprising, Kevin, is the lack of, now the TV, all the TV, I'll say, idiots are all over this stuff. And actually, we had a few questions there to the show. Chief, what is with this company? What is with Trump's nephew getting his dough? What is with these firms that didn't belong? They're not small firms. Well, the small firms got something this time, like for the first time ever. But the big firms got a hell of a lot more. Now, what about the people in the middle? I mean, I think the lack of understanding is nobody cares. When I say nobody, the economists don't care if Trump's nephew got a loan. It's the term, what part of helicopter money don't you get? They don't care where this lands. This is a new economy. This is what I'm railing about. I would hope that at least people understand where I'm coming with this. I don't agree with it. I absolutely do not agree with it. And to a point, you have to keep the markets flowing. You can't let a bond trade for 20 cents on the dollar because of the lack of liquidity in the bond market. Yes, the Fed needs to enter and make sure there's liquidity in the market. It doesn't mean that you value the bond at 120 when it should be 95. That's a totally different issue. But the idea that some firm, shouldn't have gotten the money. You think the Fed gives a rat's behind or the new modern economy people that Jeff has in his luck box this month, or modern monetary? Kevin, they don't care. If they have the personnel, they'd go and put a $100 bill in everybody's mailbox. They don't care if the...
Well, the part that was predictable too is which banks are going to make all of these loans happen. And it's going to be the bigger ones because they have the resources to pull it off. So in the most benign circumstances, in the most non-corrupt circumstances, that was the predictable way that it would shake out. And there's only a handful of small banks that were really good at getting loans for their small business customers.
I think some of them were.
This was the way it was going to shake out, no matter what happened.
I'm going to say that we at PTI, when this was starting down, we very very small amount. We banked through Harris, and they did it for us. It was a very small amount, and we did exactly what we're supposed to do. Paid everybody. And you know, like I said, it's a number that's minuscule because we're a small firm. But the point is, we did everything right, and Harris helped us out.
I mean, yeah, but Harris is, I would still consider a big bank.
But we were.
What I'm saying is, you know, it's not that the small customers didn't get loans, depending on where they bank. What I'm saying is, it was mostly the big banks that were making the loans, which means almost by definition that you're going to get a skew towards larger businesses.
Kevin, I have five people right now that I know and care about that have small businesses that I can't get their fanny over to the bank and say, look, your business, this money that you have is going to be worth 60% of what it is 3 years from now, just what you just said. You've got to get some of this money just to stay even. Kevin, 10 years ago, you couldn't have gotten me to say that. But if
right,
every...
Because nobody wants to be, quote, on the dole.
Right.
But now what you're saying is if everybody's on the dole and you're not, then you're just falling behind.
If you shoo the mailman away when he's putting a $100 bill in everybody else's mailbox, you and I know that the $100 bill in everybody's mailboxes do nothing but degrade the currency. So if you got $1,000, so does everybody else. Now they have $1,100, and the prices go up 10%, you just lost. Or they're at least even. Right?
That's right.
But you know what? It's the first time we've ever even considered something like that. And I just said, you know what? All this money going out there, we can't be the one person that doesn't get our little piece. And oh, by the way, we are still paying people. So we actually did it right. You know, I mean, but anyway, SP Futures now up 7, NASDAQ Futures up 47. We're going to try and come back from yesterday's losses. We'll come back with Mr. Russell. Kevin, see you on Friday, bud.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hollings, Matt Weber. We have Professor Russell Rhodes with us, going to solve all the problems that we have, because it's just like the
problem one.
Just like the professor on Gilligan's Island, he is our man.
Yeah. I have women that look like Ginger throwing themselves at me all the time. I just didn't know it.
Well, you also have a house full of like five Marianne's telling you what to do, and he only had one.
Oh, yes, I do.
Yes, well, that's all right, you know. That's so bad.
And I'm tucked away in the little corner of the house that they give me.
Well, be thankful for that, I guess, you know.
I am very thankful for that.
What do they say? The man to man complained he had no shoes, so he saw the man had no feet or something like that?
Exactly. I'm very happy with my station at mine.
Could be worse. You could be in a tent out in the back deck, like we know somebody was.
Somebody was doing what?
A tent out on our back deck. You could be that.
Oh, yeah. Was that? I thought that was by choice.
We never really got an explanation, nor did I ask.
It's very rare that you do get an explanation there, but when you do, it's always very interesting.
I figured whatever the answer was, I probably didn't want to hear it, so I didn't ask.
Yeah, to illustrate for the world that we have a common acquaintance who lives closer to Chief, very closer to Chief, and he, at the beginning of quarantine and whatnot, he set up a tent on top of your garage, right?
Yes.
And he lived on it for a while. Did it just blow away one day?
No, they decided
to. I never remember the resolution to it. It just went away.
I said, it's got to come down. At some
point. Oh, did you?
And they said, okay, we're going on vacation for 2 weeks. We'll take it down before we go. And I said, okay. And it came down, and off they went. You know, so it came back, okay. And now everybody's happy. I mean,
said it's got to come down. How is it bothering you, male Karen?
Because we have other people who live in the building, and it's a deck for everybody.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that completely makes sense. I didn't write.
Not to mention
were other people allowed in the tent, or you know, was it
nobody?
Like,
nobody.
When I was a kid, when I was a kid, and I would make a tent out of pillows, and nobody else was allowed in.
Well, a couple of mornings, Maddie and I were leaving for the show, and there'd be this howling wind and rain, and the thing is like making all this racket. I'm thinking, how can anybody sleep in that thing? Just saying. Mm-hmm. But I also had questions about what was being used as the restroom in the middle of the night. You know, and I didn't want to go there either, so.
No, you do not.
Just saying. We mentioned some wacky stuff that happened in the OEX pit. This is kind of an I'll keep it clean. This is how politically correct, incorrect we were. One day somebody says something about somebody has a big head.
Oh boy.
And then they said, oh, this other guy's got a big head. Well, it turns out, they ended up with a list of about seven people they thought had the biggest heads, and people were making bets on who had the biggest head. So there's all this all this dough in the pot. And sure enough, one morning somebody walks in. I haven't seen one of these in ages. Those the tape measure. It's not the it's the one where they wrap around your gut when you go into the that kind of one.
Go get my suits made, the kind of that guy uses.
Yeah, ran into the pit early, ran around and measured all these guys' heads, and everybody let them do it. And I think the guy who was on the air with us, Matty, Doug Redman, the coach, I think he might have come in second or something, but somebody else was first. I think Matt Filipovich might have been first, but I'll leave his name out of it. The joke was, would you rather have $1 million or his empty head filled with quarters or something like that? How's that for politically incorrect, Matty? There we go. I'd rather have his head filled with quarters than $1 million, man. That's bad. That's bad. Anyway, so Russell,
yes,
we have stocks flying up, and this morning the big quote is, "You just can't fundamentally value a stock like Tesla." Well, you can't forever.
You can't. You know, You couldn't fundamentally value internet stocks either.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
Yeah, well, it worked out. I know some people that got carried out, as we would put it back in the day, carried out by trying to be short those stocks, but eventually they were right. You know, I know somebody that shorted Yahoo at 100 that they went to the final four, and they went to the finals on a Monday, and Tuesday they overslept, and their Yahoo short, where they shorted it at 100, had gone all the way up to, I think, almost 400 intraday.
Yeah.
You know, and then it, you know, 18 months later, it was at 11. So
when we
there's lessons in that for those who can. And I could fundamentally put pen to paper and tell you what I think Tesla is worth, and I've been dead wrong, because the value I get is much lower than the value the market's giving it.
Well, when we first started doing this stuff on air, a little bit of the history of actually of Stacks and Jacks. Dr. J, well, not so much John, but the guys on the trading floor, there's like four of them, Tony House, Freddie Wheaties, and one of the guys who actually continued on, I forget his name, there were four guys that when cable first started, they were just looking for content. I mean, before then it was, mm-hmm. three networks plus Channel 9 filling up the day. And even then they would sign off at like midnight during the week, play the national anthem. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Imagine that, Maddie, signing off, playing the national anthem, and then it went dark till like 6 in the morning, news came in. All of a sudden, you got all these stations. Well, these guys lived up northwest suburbs, Arlington Park, and those kinds of places. So they did show on cable, and it was, it was traders on TV talking sports. Because if you ever want to see a room, with 1,500 people in it, where guys were so fanatic on sports, Maddie, they're like you and your buddies. The entire floor was like that. Everybody played Batman. Everybody's young. And everybody did. There were some, probably two or three guys on the floor who ended up in a softball Hall of Fame, and a bunch of guys played college basketball. I mean, there were some serious athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And so these guys went and did this, and finally the wives figured out they were just using this as a night to go out and get, bleep-faced after the show. So that somehow it felt bold. That ended up being the same producer from the floor that I didn't know that well, because he was from an equity crowd. He was one of the four that I didn't know. He ended up turning that into the news writers on TV for the cable show.
Okay.
Remember how big of a success? They ended up going national, didn't they, Manny? With Rick Tallender and Bill Giles and those guys. Remember that show? Was it John Carmichael? They had four.
Yeah, it was. We would get it in Memphis. My dad really liked that show.
Well, then. John got the idea we should do a Traders on TV after the show. So one night a week, we'd go over to Weigel Broadcasting. We had Benji Schwartz. I forgot the name of the other guy. He was this wacky Armenian dude. That's why John liked him. But he was allegedly a trader, but he was more of a... Well, his family had nothing but money, because they were in a building business. I mean, and he was really good at it. I mean, he built this gorgeous three-flat on the north side where he... Whatever it cost to build it, say $800,000, he sold two of the units for like $450,000, and he took the other unit like for a negative $100,000 or something. So he did pretty well on the place. But he ended up, he was one of these guys, and he wanted to short. He thought there was something wrong with the books in this tenant healthcare. This is 15, 20 years ago. And the entire family money he's now managing, and the entire family money is short tenant healthcare. And every day the thing's going up, 40, 45, 50, 65. And the guy is gagging, right? And I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I think he ended up, somehow got taken out. I don't know if he had enough money to be back in the building business or something. It had to be 6 months later, somebody came out, the books were screwed up, something. Stock's trading like 5. Jeez. And all I kept thinking about when I saw this thing, every time I saw it trading $5, all I did was think of this poor guy. if he'd have just hung on another month, or if he would have started a month later, how you know, how the guy'd be one of the richest men in town, and I don't even know if, I don't know what happened to him, but I haven't talked to him since then. But I mean, a lot of this is just timing. You can be right, but early.
Oh yeah, him, it's, no, I was at a hedge fund where there were only three of us. In 2006, we were short housing and lost 30% in the first quarter. We started the year with right at $1 billion, and we ended the first quarter with $700 million. And we had one big backer who yanked it out from us. Actually, we didn't make it through the quarter because they yanked our funding the first day of the NCAA tournament. And basically, I went to the bar and watched basketball for 12 hours and got sloshed, and then came home to my 4-month pregnant wife and made an announcement.
Well, that had to go
over. We were dead on, and the company that backed us with all of those funds basically held our positions, and by the end of the second quarter, they were doing pretty well with what we had put together. So, yes, I think just about everybody in our business has a timing story like that where they got everything absolutely correct. When I make a major pronouncement with respect to the market and I share it with my better half, she always tells me, write it down in the calendar 6 months from now, because you're always 6 months early.
Well, yeah, I've told
us. And when you and I talk about this stuff, and I'll say we're closer to it than most people, I think that's why.
I think I get this too. I'll run this one by you. We look at the market, well, individual stocks. I mean, how many people probably shorted Enron a year before and they all got carried out? And look what happened to that place.
Oh, I worked with some people that ran energy specific funds that, you know, knew what was going on at Enron. If you were paying attention, but the sell side wasn't going to point it out for you because they were making a boatload of money on banking fees and et cetera. In that space, they didn't want it to fall apart.
Well, I don't think I've told this story before in the air. I'll keep it brief, but I don't think I've mentioned it to you because you're the stat man. PTI first started. Our biggest client was a guy out of Chandler, Arizona, and a more unusual dude. Some night when we have a chance to throw one down together, I'll give you this guy's story because it's really something. I mean, he was probably the second biggest. Developer in the Scottsdale Phoenix area below Keating when all this stuff blew up in the Resolution Trust. But he kind of saw the handwriting on the wall and he'd gotten rid of like 100 properties before it happened. Real bright guy, character, very conservative. I was allegedly the only Democrat ever in his house, that kind of thing. But talk about a guy who walked on water. And, he had three islands up in the Bay of the Islands up in Ontario. Audrey and I went and stayed there. Something, if Audrey's got the pictures, someday I'll show them to you. You wouldn't believe it. It was like House Beautiful on this island out in the middle of nowhere. And, but anyway, he was a big technical guy in the commodity side. And when you're talking about being early, he put $250,000 of his own money in an account and he trades this for a year. And I mean, we're talking about a guy who's nose to the grindstone. I mean, he got 24 hours out of the day. And he was a navigator POW World War II. His plane went down somewhere, B-24, and spent a few months before he got liberated at the end of the war. But anyway, so he had a war record to hold. But tough dude. So he tells me, you know, every time I made a trade, I was early. At the end of the year, I'm even. He goes, well, that's not any good because I'm wasting all my time doing this. And he's doing silver. He's doing live bellies or live cattle. He's doing bellies and he still had bellies. And he's got all these different things. And he's using Joe Granville's fundamental thing. And he's using, the candlesticks. There's like four big fundamental
Steve
things.
Steve Nathan.
Yeah, he's using like all four of them. And he's got his future sources. He's the first guy I saw that had like 12 screens in front of him. And whenever they'd match up, he'd make a trade. And he kept saying, I always get stopped out. I always get stopped out. What the hell's going on here? But he also was a mathematician kind of guy. Must have been from when he was in the Army or something. But he starts doing regression analysis on all these different commodities. Now, I have no idea. I'm going to just throw out examples because I don't remember, and I don't trade commodities that much. And he said every single one had their own delay factor, he was finding. when all his stuff told him this one's a buyer, this one's a sell, every single one of them had a different day's delay before it would. I was almost always right, but I was almost always early. But the thing that frosted me, or really shocked the hell out of me, was that every one of them. I think he said corn had 6 days, live cattle was like 2 weeks, gold might have been 3 weeks. I mean, again, this is totally off the top of my head from 20 years ago, and he said every one of them had a different time. So as soon as I figured that out, or saw that, I'd say, okay, I want to go long corn, but I'll wait 6 days, or maybe I'd wait 5 days just to make sure, or 1 day in. And he said, as soon as I started doing that, I'm printing money. He said every single one was different. And he found the most flummoxing one of all was the S&P. He said that one was just, it was very hard to do any kind of analysis on, and he couldn't figure out what the time delay there was at all. Very, very difficult. And Dr. J would always say, when I was in the OEX and he was in the IBM, he'd say, this is years ago quote, so don't take it for it's like trade on it. He goes, the OEX, everything is a one day event. He goes, in an equity, it's always a 2 or 3 day event. Because even if it's earnings, people that own IBM, if the earnings are crapo, there's going to be a further sell-off the next day, because they're not staring at the TV like the rest of us. They're going to read Wall Street Journal the next morning and say, holy crap, I'm going to get out of my IBM. Earnings suck. Because there's always a follow-through. He says, in the broad market, the broad market, the news is out, it's out. Enough people are reading
and
it.
And they adjust.
Just adjust. There's a lot to what you just said, but none of that is quantifiable and tradable, but it's what you and I have both seen in all the years we've been in the business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the beyond what you just cited John for with respect to IBM and the overall market, each stock has its own, the ones, and I'm not talking about all, 4,500 stocks that are out there right now, but the ones that everybody pays attention to and trades, the 20, 30, 40 ones that probably get 80% of the sites on CNBC, they all have their own little behaviors as well. And one of the things I tell into it, we don't give a lot of it personal advice here, but one of the things that I told individuals when I was working at the Options Institute is, know 4 or 5 stocks and know them really, really well. And, if you have the insights into an individual stock like you just brought up about IBM, you can actually do really well with it. And you don't have to trade everything under the sun.
Well, I'm going to follow up on that, but we have a quick question first. Matty?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we just have a Twitter question here. Michael writes in. You can follow us on Twitter at stocks, the letter NJocks. He says, guys, what do you think of oil? There is an ascending triangle on the daily futures chart.
I'll go first. I would say that in today's world, which I think is pretty competitive in oil, I'm going to say that I think that the real price of oil is somewhere between $38 and $48 a barrel, and we're kind of right in the middle of that. So I think we're back to where we probably should be, and maybe on the lower end. That's not tradable. That's just an opinion.
I got to turn my machine on and take a look at the way I pick a direction for oil is I take a look at the volatility skew, because sometimes the puts have a higher implied volatility than the calls, and sometimes the calls have a higher implied volatility than the puts. It's different than how stocks in the stock market works. And I have found that is a great directional indicator. I haven't turned my machines on yet. It's too early for that, but I've always felt like that works particularly well. It does seem to be range bound right now. If it hits the high end of the range and the call implied vol really starts to run up, I think there's actually a higher likelihood we might break out to the upside and vice versa to the downside. So I know that's not an answer to the specific question, but that's how I would go about looking at it. During the break, I'll go look at it.
Well, I think that oil has become one of the most fascinating things, really, in most people's lifetime, because I'm old enough to remember before this, but I think the guys from, if anything, should be telling people, well, again, my opinion is the OPEC is useless. That we went from being a very controlled market to OPEC cannot control the market anymore, and I think the market is competitive. And I think the competitive price is right about where it is, maybe a little higher. That's my opinion. I mean, I'm not an oil trader or anything like that, but and whoever thought that OPEC would be worth zero, and they are. I mean, there was a time when I say worth zero, they can still manipulate a little bit, okay, but there was a time when Saudi Arabia could cut their production by 10% and have the price of oil go up 15 or 20%. That is spectacular, Professor. You know, I think you'll agree with me on this. That is spectacular market power when you can actually, you know, cut your production and end up with more money. All right, compare that to a corn farmer, even the biggest one Maddie's ever seen in Iowa, that says, "I don't like these prices. Screw you guys. I'm not gonna plant my 5,000 acres." You think the market even cares? All he did was not participate in that year's crop. I'm going to say the price of corn went down, you know, one millionth of a cent. It went down something because he didn't grow, right? But it's negligible. And there's no way on earth that he could cut back and actually end up with more dough like the Saudis could at one point. Saudis can't do that anymore.
How many farmers would it take?
All of them? They could move the price, Manny, but not enough. What I'm saying, market power is cutting back 10% on your production and having the price go up more than 10%, so you end up with more dough.
Right.
That's monopoly power, which at one point the cartel had, and they don't have anywhere near that. It's not like if they all go to, you know, Vienna, quaff some shrimp and drink the booze they're not supposed to drink at home, that if they cut their production by 25%, they can't affect the market, but they're slitting their own throat. There's the difference.
Right.
I mean,
that makes sense.
I mean, if they're going to cut their production 25%, and what do you figure, Russell? They get the price to go up 8 or 10, so they
can't do like they used to do, and you're dead on with that one. Where what they end up coming up with actually has a lot of influence, and you know why they lost their influence? Because they would make an announcement, people would adjust to the announcement, and then everybody would cheat.
Well, they also, the last time, you know,
they'd say, okay, we're only going to pull out 10 million barrels a day, period. And next thing you know, 13 million are coming out. And, you know, because different country, and nobody was towing the line. Everybody was, you know, if you want to have an effective cartel or monopoly, everybody's got to be all in and follow the rules. And OPEC cheating was just something that we all became used to.
My first professor was Milton Friedman. You're number two, right?
Okay.
Somebody asked him, this is when a cartel was forming when we were in grad school. And he said one of the hardest things to do is to maintain discipline
on
your fellow cartelees. And he goes, this thing will, here's a guy that was early. This is 1975. He says, oh, don't worry, this thing will break apart. Yeah, he was right. 40 years later.
It took off.
Yeah. There's your perfect example of the tenured professor. Don't worry, in 50 years, everything will be okay. 50 years is like a long time for everybody else. You're getting paid. You know, it's a different. It's all right, you got to tell us what's going on with schools and stuff. Are people opening? Is there going to be any sports? What's going on?
Probably the biggest thing that happened this week is if you are over here on a student visa and you're not taking live classes, you're supposed to go home.
In preparation
and
of having you
that
here.
That has created some major issues for just about any school, because part of the attraction behind coming over here and going to school is getting to come over here. And I'm in charge of the MS and finance program at Loyola now, and God knows I'm getting a ton of emails about how we're going to handle this. And so we were all prepared for what we were going to deliver online and what we're going to do in person, and I'm basically going to spend most of my day today rejiggering how we do everything.
You might have to find time for this, though. I just got a text from one of the other contributors of the show, and I won't say who. And he said that Brooks Brothers just declared bankruptcy. Might be a day for half-price cardigans.
Oh, gosh, and sweater vests. Oh, my God. I. You know what? Can you find somebody to fill in for the last half hour? I got to go shop.
I just was reading. I mean, the The funny part is, I mean, I'm trying to. Here's about eight different subjects, and I'm trying to wrap up into one, and I'm so good. I'm so bad at this.
And you only have 1 minute.
And I only got 1 minute because this all has to do with the Black Lives Matter and all the different things. I mean, how we're going to make progress in parts of the population, and I won't just say just black parts of the population that somehow have not done for a long period of time, as well as other parts. And I keep lobbing stuff out there as to why. Earlier in the show, why we're not having classes in the schools that are closed for people to learn how to do carpentry and plumbing and welding and stuff right now when it seems like those things are in high demand. I just don't get it. Air conditioning people, heating people. I mean, we're wasting time here, in my opinion. But I was just looking here. We'll continue to say after the show, 11,000 out of the 40-some thousand students in Illinois are from overseas. And they're all paying top dollar, right? So,
yeah.
So this is a massive hole in the budget of the University of Illinois. But not only that, if Illinois all of a sudden starts accepting 10,000 more people from somewhere, then maybe now we're not going to go to Wisconsin or Indiana or someplace. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about losing a Northern Illinois, losing an Eastern Illinois, which is the bastion of people that of color, people who maybe can't make it into Illinois, and those schools are pretty darn good. So the last thing you want to do is lose one of these regional universities, because that's where the people that aren't, you know, the 5%ers are going. I mean, but everything falls back on that. We'll talk about it after the break, Russell. SP Futures up 4.25, NASDAQ Futures up 32. In other words, you can't be helping out those communities and lose Northern Illinois. You can't do that. I mean, it's all part of the same picture. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Just been working on the board. We have Professor Russell Rhodes with us as well. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 30, trying to make up for yesterday's market turnaround, and we actually finished down first time in like quite a while. We have a machine blocking again, maybe. But I look at so much stuff during the show that by the second time through here, I gag this thing. Why don't you try the weather sports?
I can do that. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a good start for the most part. Still have a couple of issues on two area expressways, though. We had an earlier crash on the Kennedy on the outbound side at Irving Park, and that has caused slowdown if you're heading out to O'Hare in that direction. Downtown to Montrose is up to 30 minutes. Out to O'Hare is 40 minutes. Still not terrible, but some delays from that earlier crash just before Irving Park Road on the outbound at Kennedy. Inbound side looks okay, as does the Edens. Eisenhower has been quiet all morning. On the inbound Stevenson, we had an earlier crash just before Pulaski. That crash has now been cleared, but expect delays on the northbound side of the Stevenson as well. Outbound side is okay. That earlier piece of concrete on the outbound side at Pulaski has been cleared, so that's good news. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford have been quiet all morning. No accidents or issues to report. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Suburban tollways are quiet too. Weather today, it's going to be another hot and steamy day, but more clouds and more chances of rain than we've seen the last few days. We'll reach a high of 88. Right now it's overcast and 77 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 110. Right now it's clear and 91. Chief.
Over DAX is down 80. That's 0.6%. FTSE down 23.4%. CAC around down 50. That's a full 1%. So the CAC around kind of leading things down over there. Nikkei down 176. That's 0.8%. Shanghai up again. 58. That's 1.7. These guys, I think, are got to be up 9% in 3 days after the government essentially threw money at the market. Hang Seng up 153.6%. Bonds, 10-year, 0.65. Bund, minus 0.45. Japan hanging to the positive, plus 0.01%, so not by much. Oil up 8 cents, 40.70. Brent up 16 cents, 43.24. Natural gas actually down today. Wow, 183. It's still a big run-up in the last few weeks. RBOB 127. And here's the news, is gold up 6.10, 18.16. I've been long gold here. I sold some calls. I've been chasing these calls, and now I'm really chasing them. Silver up 14 cents, 18.84, but it's been a nice run for me and my guys in there. Copper, 279, so continuing to inch up, inch up. I guess that's it. Matty already gave traffic, weather, sports. What, when is, if you were one of these Major League Baseball teams, would you rather all your guys had COVID or not?
Oh, gosh, I don't want them to have COVID. I am one of these Major League Baseball teams. I want them to get back to playing.
I'm talking about...
I want them to get to work.
I'm saying, would you rather have all your 25-year-old guys already had it?
I would prefer that they've already... That they've gotten it and it's run its course. I really would.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that I'd gotten it and it'd run its course at this point because I'd like to get back out into the world.
You could be a serious candidate for the people that have, since you've been all over the world, for the people who have the T-cell immunity that they're finding now.
Huh. I didn't even think about that, but that's very much of a possibility.
That's why you listen to the show.
Because I would spend, really, but when I was at SIBO, I would easily spend 10 weeks out of the year outside of the United States, mostly in Asia.
Well, they think
it might... When I go over there, they leave me there for 3 weeks.
They think that either is from a weaker strain of the COVID that nobody knew about, could be a bad cold, could be a weaker strain of SARS that came after and nobody got sick from, whatever it is, that's what they're thinking now. It's why 40 or 50% of the people don't seem like they get this at all. That there's a and now they've been analyzing blood and there's a T-cell immunity and they have no idea where it came from. I just hope I got some, wherever it came from.
Yep. Well, you kind of maintain a consistent pattern. I doubt that you picked it up.
What do you mean? I always have been near germy people in the OEX pit and everything else. Who knows
what
I could have
picked
up?
Well, that was years ago.
True.
I'm talking about now.
Well, I mean,
in the You have a clockwork pattern, which is great. You have to. You got to get up early and get down there.
True.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I was looking forward very much to having you on today is I've been preaching all over the place that when things like this hit an economy, it hits the people that don't get counted the worst. And it seems like it's hitting these educational places. I mean, the people in Indiana last week were talking about maybe, I keep forgetting the name of this place, man. It's the University of Purdue campus. Northern Indiana, Purdue or something? It's in,
is it Calumet?
No, anyway, it's close to Ogden Dunes. I don't know if it's in Hobart or it's in some place over there. Gary, not sure, one of those places, but they're not sure they're viable. And they all, I mean, there's probably five people teach there. I mean, I don't know that we want to lose these places. I mean,
I don't think we want to lose these places. And were you getting ready to say which one it was?
No, but
I'm looking at all the Purdue locations. They have a Purdue University Northwest, which is in,
I think that's the one we're
Hammond
talking about.
And Westville.
Yeah. That's the one we're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, Purdue University Northwest is what it's called.
And
No, I do think, but I think losing second and third tier schools, and I hate to say it that way, but I think losing schools was a trend that was already in place because more and more people were doing things online.
Yeah, those schools had declining
rates.
And
I think this has accelerated it.
Well, Eric wrote a big piece on it the other day to answer it. He said the demographics, there's not enough kids for all these schools like there was 20 years ago.
Demographically we're going to dip as well, and I just know that because 7-8 years ago I was on a school board. I was on the District 181 school board, and we actually had a dip in enrollment, and now they would be at college age. So there are fewer folks. That's one of the reasons we like the students from outside the United States.
Well,
know the stats. You would know the stats, Russell. So even though more people go to college now than ever before, but it's still less overall students because the population is less. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a dip in that. This has been years, but like we had one school that was K through five. That had about 400 students, and I had a 4-year tenure when I was on the board, and the same school went to about 360. It was like a 10% drop, and it's just this goes all the way back to baby boomers and everything else, where there are waves of higher and lower population, and right now we are in a dip period for college age kids. It's not significant, but it's something. If you're marginally getting by, and there's a certain number of students you need every year, you may actually have to lower the standards just a little bit and let a few more people in. Now, if fewer people started going to college, which actually I think even though I work at a university, I feel like there's a trade school gap that some people could really would be better off going and learning how to do something that they end up making $100,000 a year at, as opposed to majoring in something that doesn't get them anywhere professionally. I think there are other reasons that maybe fewer people should be going to college, but there are fewer people available to go to college right now.
Well, I know the directional schools, especially Eastern and Western Illinois, have been declining for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And really bad. They've been in danger of closing for a long time, and this probably could put one or both of them over the top.
Well, Eric, he just sent us, I don't know if you read it, man, he sent us a missive the other day. You probably did, Russell, you're on the list, where he said it's been happening for a long time, and the foreign students, the incredible increased amount of foreign students has made it sort of all go away and not be so obvious. So, there were never 11,000 foreign students in University of Illinois 20 years ago.
No, it's become a much bigger part of the student body for sure.
Well now, right? if you boot those people out, let's just say the shock through the system is going to be dramatic.
Yeah.
But the high school, but how many high schools?
What's going on is they've suddenly, at the ICE, came out and said, if you are a if you're a university student from abroad and your coursework is only going to be offered online during the fall semester, you can't stay. And my understanding is, and this is just infuriating the heck out of me, my understanding is, you know, the powers that be want the economy as open as possible and want us teaching in the classroom, and they think this is a way to force that to happen. And it's not, because we're not going to give up safety, you know, just because we get bullied into it. At least I, you know, not that I speak for any, I don't make any decisions where I teach, but I think the motivation behind it is just awful.
It could be, at some point here, I don't know where, there's going to have to be a call made, and they're going to have to say that if you don't want to teach, don't. I mean, it's on the first part of the show, Russell, we were talking about, after all this time, does anybody know how dangerous a class of 10-year-olds is? I've read stuff that they, A, don't even get the thing, and they don't transfer it to people. I don't know what age it changes. Everybody that I know have had the disease, and it's not a huge number of them, but I know, you know, some, the young kids in the family never even got touched, never even knew anybody else had it. So, I mean, I don't know the answers. My concern is, after all this time, either people don't know the answers, which is kind of crazy, or somehow or another they don't like what the answers are, and they're not getting out, which is even worse. You know,
I don't know
what it is. But I was railing on a before you came on. Some guy was on CNBC yesterday. He's a Duke professor, railing about safety and you shouldn't be opening these places. The guy's still getting paid, Russell.
I'm cut off the check
and see what happens.
I'm going to get paid the same either way at Loyola. And actually, not opening is a lot more work for me than opening, because I have to redo the way that I do everything.
I think some of these guys are talking about not opening.
Did you read Harvard? They said they're 100% online this year, but they're not lowering tuition.
Nope.
How's that?
Well, but there would be people that they don't. I mean, let's face it. When you go to Harvard, there's people that would pay $1 million for the degree and not even go.
Exactly. Well, I that was in the back of my mind when I read that. Was you're not necessarily. What percentage of the $40,000 a year or whatever it is, or $40,000 a semester, is buying the Harvard degree versus what you're going to learn there?
Right. I mean,
because you know, I look at the syllabus. I look at the books. They use the same books there that I use at Loyola. And
sure,
I'm not saying that, you know, in their graduate business school. And I'm not saying that the students they deal with aren't, like, you know, a little bit brighter than the ones that I work with, but I don't think they're teaching a whole lot different than I am.
A couple of the guys from my high school went to Harvard. He was always coming by Notre Dame and, like, spending a week with his buddies. I don't know of anybody at Notre Dame that left for a week. There wasn't Notre Dame was like a military school, for God's sake. I mean, you grounded every day. It was like going to West Point in terms of having to be in class and getting this. I mean, the idea that you never showed up, though, I know a couple of guys that didn't, they barely made it. But even those guys started out pretty good and then managed to screw up their junior, senior year and barely made it. But, I mean, at some point, you're gonna have to figure it out. I mean, I keep looking back at that picture of the people teaching class in the old days when TB was the thing, and there was no walls on the place, and they're teaching class outside in the wintertime. The world is not going to hinge on whether a 65-year-old professor decides he's safe or not. We're gonna move on or not without his opinion. You know, I'm just saying. At some point, we're gonna all decide to move forward and or not. And I'm, you know, I hope I don't get caught in that because I'm not a kid. But the but I also know when last night I was I got caught in a discussion with. There's 100,000 kids in Phoenix that say I don't give a bleep. They're 25 to 35, and the idea that somehow or another you have to tell them what to do in case they should come in contact with you, boy, that's a stretch. I mean, the young people are doing what young people always do. I mean, Maddie, you just said they just took down the basketball hoops at the place you guys were playing ball.
Yeah.
I mean, who's making these calls? We can't. You can't fish. You can't do this. I mean, at some point, anybody who thinks this thing is containable or somehow or another, if everybody paid attention to Lori Lightfoot, it would be gone in 3 weeks. I'm going to say something. You're out of your mind. It is not what's happening. I mean, it's not what's happening. You're going to get flare-ups. They're going to flare. They're going to get to a herd mentality in those areas. Thankfully, we seem to have some sort of a head start, whatever these T-cell things are, and some people are not susceptible. What if everybody was susceptible? What if it was more deadly? I mean, then we'd really be a bleep creek without a paddle, right?
Well, I think it were more deadly. You know, if it... What percentage of people is it actually are dying from it?
It appears to be, if you count all the people that probably have had it or have it, it looks like about 0.5%.
Right. Puts it about even if that number were just 5%, you would have a lot. Yeah, you'd have a much different behavioral aspect to all of this.
Right.
But you know, there's just this. I'm going to live for it. You know, honestly, now, you know, my wife is a healthcare professional, and she lays down the law as far as how I'm supposed to behave. We went and did our taxes yesterday, and we got in the car, and she gave me this hand sanitizer and said, use this now, and after we were done and everything, she was all over that. But honestly, the way that I approach things, I don't think it would kill me I don't think it would hit me that hard if I were to contract it. So I'm probably a little, and I'm not around anybody that's high risk. So, you know, I don't really think that I would, if I were a single guy still living downtown, I don't think I'd be nearly as cautious as I'm being forced to be by the person I live with.
Well, some people are absolutely off the chart. I mean, Maddie and I were out in front last week, Maddie. And a girl walked by in the street. She had her mask on. She's out jogging. And she jogs by in the street. First of all, jogging with a mask on, I don't know how healthy that is, but...
I couldn't do that.
No.
Most people, when they're jogging, do try to avoid you.
Yeah.
You know, which is a respectful thing, because you don't know how people are going to react. It's not about them. It's about, in their mind, it's about, you know, protecting you. And so they'll try to avoid you. Does it help anything outside? Probably not. But it's just something I've noticed.
Yeah. The few times that I've been able to do that, I have a straight shot one way and a straight shot back. And if somebody's coming the other day, one of us will get in the street and the other one won't. Just make sure we do not cross paths.
Okay.
There is a little common courtesy out there.
But there's also
this thing.
There's also
but,
the, who's the guy? Is it not Tepper? Some guy. He's on CNBC. He always comes out. He's always on for like a half hour, and he's this real big guy with a short crew cut, blonde hair, and he owns a bunch of restaurants. I think he might own some major league team, Maddie. I don't think it's baseball, but and he's got all these restaurants, and he's talking about how now they're not letting the restaurants open in L.A. And he said, you know what? He goes, somehow or another, we got to get somebody who's going to make some rules, and we're just going to stick with them, and however it plays out, it plays out. He goes, these people are all at home, the places are shut down, and everybody's on unemployment, and I'm running out of the money that I got, you know, to pay everybody. He says, but all of a sudden they say you can open. I go out and I buy all this food. I restock the place. I drag these guys back in because we had a week to clean the place and everything else. Everybody's now off unemployment. I'm paying them. Then they say, you're supposed to open tomorrow. By the way, you can't. And he goes, I just flew out here on an American Airlines plane. Every single seat was taken. Nobody's 1 foot away, less six. And I had this place all set up for everybody 6 foot away, sanitized after every lease. He goes, there's not even any problem in here. I'm taking temperatures of my people. I know we've already had it. He goes, there's no problem here. And yet, the same people are saying I can be on an airplane sitting next to two people coughing, and here I can't even open my place. I mean, he goes, who are these morons, and where's the consistency? I mean, and you can't argue with the man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we don't, whatever the plan is, there's always going to be somebody who's going to not like it, okay? But someplace, somebody in the middle, somebody who's not, we will all stay in until and wear masks until the last COVID germ leaves the country. That day isn't coming. I got news for you people. That day is not coming. There's not going to be 100% vaccine. There's not going to be anything anytime that we can think of. There might be an antibody thing that will give everybody nursing homes, that will give them a head start, that will help, which I pray for.
Mm-hmm.
And there's better treatment for people who get it, which there already is, okay, which I think is a big plus. I think that if I got it in April, I'd have a 20% chance of croaking. I'm guessing it's probably down to 5.
I think they got it down better.
Yeah, because they got it down better. First thing you do when you get in there is you get a steroid and you get anticoagulant drugs. Mostly all the young people that were dying from it, because there were a few, were dying from their immune system overreacting and causing blood clots in their lungs. So the minute they, especially a young person, they get anticoagulant drugs, which seems to have stopped that. Which doesn't mean there's not going to be a young person that's died. But the point is, you can't sit in your house and sit there and go, oh man, a 31-year-old guy died in Rapid City, South Dakota. That means everybody's got to stay in for another 6 months. That's not going to work, guys. Mm-hmm. If it was SARS and 10% of the people were dying, well, yeah. But this isn't, fortunately. I'm just saying what I've been reading, and I'm looking at the economy, and I'm just saying that the solution here is in the middle. We're going to have to be careful, but you can't guarantee that nobody's going to get a germ. I mean, you can't guarantee the cold. You can't keep. And I don't know where do you at some point these universities? No, I'm not paying you $70,000. How much different are you than the University of Phoenix, for God's sake? If I'm on a line, none.
Well, I'm going to have to take exception with that.
A little bit.
I think I do a better job.
I think you do too. But there isn't to say that there isn't a really good economics professor at the University of Phoenix that everybody thinks is useless because of the University of Phoenix. Notre Dame was never known as an economics school, yet I had 4 or 5 guys there that were spectacular. A couple other guys that had mostly football players in their class. I mean, duh, right? But I always took the other guys. Go ahead.
I think there's some things beyond just being online that separate us from.
I'm not going to compare Loyola
to the online business schools or the pure for profit schools. That's what kind of bothers me.
What's profit these days? I mean, what does profit even mean? Because that's another. If you have some time, I want to kind of dig it. We don't have time. We'll do it next week. But what does profit even mean? Commonwealth Edison, do they care if they make profit? They care about paying themselves huge bonuses at the top.
They care about that. They care about making sure that they continue to pay out their dividends so that nobody gives them a hard time.
Right. But the idea...
That's probably, I want to work and not be hassled too much. Like the guy in Office Space, I just don't want to be hassled too much and I want to make my money.
But to say with the amount of money flying through, and I won't use your school, Notre Dame, that they operate any differently than if they had a profit motive. I mean, just because the school's for profit, because they want to know something on the bottom line. I mean, a school that's charging $20,000 is for profit, we're going to give no one a crap to, and somebody charging $70,000, they don't care if somebody comes out of there with a job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's the difference? You're giving me grief for the right reasons. What I'm saying is, if somebody gives an accounting course from Notre Dame or Loyola or Northern Illinois or from the University of Phoenix, if it's accounting 101, it's pretty much the same course online.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at when I was talking about Harvard versus Loyola. I think a lot of the courses are very, very similar. When you get into more specialization, there's probably a little bit more of a difference as well.
Well, nobody's going to get you at the University of Phoenix.
No, they're not.
I'm going to blow some smoke up your behind. You would be a guy that if I was in college, here's a guy that knows all the markets, has done all the stuff, has been around the world. You'd be an it professor for me. I'd want to be.
Yeah, they like me at Loyola. I got them, and it's kind of like when I felt like I was dating above myself. Sometimes I feel like I got them fooled. So I'll go with that.
So who are you dating? Like J. Paul Getty's daughter or what?
I've been married for almost 20 years. We're gonna just keep that in the past.
All right. So you're saying that you selected the proper one?
Yes. Oh, by far. Yes.
Well, there
she
you go.
She picked me.
Well, 20 years means a lot. It means you did, for God's sake, right?
It does. 40% of my lifetime.
Yeah. So are you bullish or bearish? You got 1 second.
I'm actually neutralish. I think we're going to hover around for 6 weeks or so, and then I'm a little concerned about how things go this fall.
Yeah, me too, boy.
We'll
talk about that next week.
Push that forward 6 months, and you got it.
Yep. All right, but SP Futures up 5. NASDAQ Futures up 35. We're trying to come back from yesterday. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.